Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Iron fans around the world, and welcome back to the Iron Brew podcast. It's been a long time since we last did a podcast. I believe we're going back to the 25th of August, but as you'll probably have noticed, a lot of different things have happened since then. So welcome back, and we have a big announcement of our own. The Iron Brew podcast now has a sponsor, so we're delighted to welcome West Green Surveying to be the official sponsor of the podcast. Thanks to the guys across at West Green Surveying for supporting us. Just a little bit of information about West Green, and they're a firm of chartered surveyors who specialise in project management, quantity surveying, building surveying, and aerial drone surveys across both public and private sectors. They cover Yorkshire and the Lincolnshire region, and their expertise enables them to provide insight and solutions tailored to clients in the local area. So if you want to know anything more about West Green Surveying, or you want a quote, if you go to the Iron Brew website, there is a news item about that, and there is also a link to West Green's website there. I'm sure you'll be able to find them if you Google West Green Surveying as well. So thank you very much to West Green, the new Iron Brew podcast sponsors. Let's get into it. Matt Ellis, as you can probably tell, and also Matt Blanchard. Hi, Matt. How's it going?
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? But I think it's about time we did one. Lots to discuss.
Absolutely. That is very, very right. There is so much to discuss. I've got a list longer than my arm here. Difficult knowing to what to start with, actually, with this one, because there's so much stuff has happened. But obviously, there's a lot of recent stuff that's happened as well. So it's like, we kind of have to address the kind of goings on since what is it now, sort of like mid September or something like that, when it all really started to kick off. I think that's about right. So I think probably the best place to start is the sort of the last days of Rome, as it were, of Mr. Hilton's sort of tenure of Scunthorpe United, when as you'll know, Matt and myself and another Iron fan called Dave Green were all banned from Scunthorpe United Football Club by the former owner, David Hilton. We were banned. There was a lot of uproar. It went viral. I went on TV. I went on TV again. I went on radio. Most of my spare time, even during the day at work, was taken up by media appearances, really just to try and highlight the not just my situation. I knew I was banned, but I always knew I was, I was going to get back into the club. And same with Matt and same with Dave. But it was just about trying to highlight that wider problem of really shitty football club ownership and trying to get more kind of eyes, more media attention around Scunthorpe United and the club's plight as a whole. And I think we did manage to do that. And of course, Mr. Hilton took on the brew and we essentially buried him, didn't we? So that's what happened there. Fast forward to a lot of other bits that happened, but eventually there was an agreement that was made between a local business group, including Michelle Harness and all the new members of the board that were successful in buying Scunthorpe. Kind of, we don't think about it as much on a day-to-day basis, really, because we go to the game on Saturday. We seem to be winning every week up until Saturday against Boston, but we've been doing really, really well in the league. But, the club very much still needs the support of fans, and it's been saved, but it's the hard work only kind of started when the club was saved and Michelle took on the reins, if you like, because of the long-standing debt that was dropped on the club by Mr. Hilton and on all that stuff. And really, the club needs support. It needs people to go down to other matches, people to buy merchandise, people to buy food, beer. You won't need convincing of that one when you go down to Glenford Park, or as it's now called, the Attis Arena, on a Saturday and a Tuesday. So, Iron fans keep doing that, and I'm sure we'll get through it. But, a lot of stuff happened, didn't it, Matt? It's Some of it's a blur, some of it isn't. But, you know, what do you want to highlight about that kind of that period of sort of massive upheaval in Scunthorpe United's recent history?
Yeah, it was all a bit surreal, to be honest. I mean, when the email came through saying that we were banned, I was actually abroad, so I was kind of poolside, drinking hand, and I was just looking through my emails, and it came through, and it was one of those. I mean, I think Peter Swan had threatened me a couple of times, but obviously never came to fruition. However, you know, it was one of those. I didn't really expect it, but then given kind of what had happened in the week prior, then, you know, I could see why it had happened. I do think it was kind of an easy way out for him, really. I don't think he expected it to go as viral as it did, because obviously I think it went around Twitter. There were millions and millions of views, and it all kind of blew up, really. And I was there, you know, abroad, and you were doing most of the media appearances. Things like that, and it was, you know, it was great. I think what you did was fantastic to highlight sort of what was going on, and I think it needed that really, because I know there were a couple of outlets, obviously The Athletic running the story about Hilton. There were a couple of other sort of larger outlets that had touched it. You know, I think the Eye paper, Daniel's story at the Eye, and there were a few others that kind of chipped in, but. Really, again, you know, we've seen it many times before with other clubs that are facing similar predicaments. The media really do get hold of it a little bit too late, I think. And it was at the stage where something had to happen, and it had to happen relatively quickly. Obviously, I was in discussions with Michelle about the fundraiser, that obviously an amazing amount of money that was raised for the staff and the players. So I was kind of in discussions that week with the club, and it was Michelle as kind of the link really into the club that week, just kind of discussing how we split the money up and things like that. And I've spoken to Jimmy and Lee, and, you know, we were having some good discussions about that. And it was kind of the night before I flew home, I had the call from Michelle, and she said, "I think I'm going to buy it." And, you know, it was kind of like, wow, you know, I didn't really expect it. Although, you know, I'd been regular contact with Michelle. I knew that she was kind of part of the consortium, if you like, that that we're going to look to take over. But it was getting really desperate, and she kind of rang. She said, "Look, I think I'm going to do it. I think I'm just going to take the punt and see what happens." And that was then. And then fast forward sort of 12 hours, got on a flight, got back home, expected it all to come through, and it had hit a couple of snags. And to be honest, I went down to the club that day to kind of look at how we could split the money up, and it was surreal. You know, you watch kind of behind the scenes documentaries on Netflix and things like that. I mean, this kind of one I'd witnessed in 4 or 5 hours when I was down there kind of blew it all out of the water. And it was, yeah, you just didn't think it was that bad. And obviously, I only saw a brief kind of snapshot of what had been going on. Obviously, staff that have been working down there were seeing this on a daily basis. And I just got the, you know, a couple of hours of it. And it was just, you just couldn't believe how bad it had got. And it was really a case of it had to go through. Otherwise, I think the club would be gone by now. So I think it's taken an amazing sort of effort from Michelle, the rest of the board. Obviously, Rog was there most days, chipping away and trying to get a deal over the line with Michelle, and obviously Simon and the others that have since joined the board, Ian and the rest. And, you know, he's taken an amazing effort to first of all, secure the short-term future of the club, and then start chipping away at the debt and trying to get that down to a sustainable level and get back on an even keel. I mean, I saw, obviously, I don't know who we owe and whatever, but I saw a pile of bills, and it was, you know, an A4 sort of reel of paper thick with the amount of bills and all sorts of things. It was just insane, and it's crazy that it got that to that stage, really. And, you know, the National League and others really did turn a blind eye, and I think that is the most disappointing thing at the moment when we're talking about sort of Michelle revealed we're still under embargo and transfer embargoes, which I understand is kind of the rules, you know, that's the rules at the moment until we've paid off football creditors and the revenue and the revenue that we owed from previous. However, it does seem a little bit unfair when they've got rid of a hell of a lot of the debt and, you know, they're working towards paying the rest. However, you know, the National League kind of turned a blind eye at that stage, and unfortunately the new board are kind of they're getting the consequences of it. So yeah, it's frustrating. But I think what's happened in the past sort of three or four months, the way the community's kind of rallied together, you know, the turnouts through the gate has been fantastic, and what's happened off the pitch, you know, to get the club, or just to keep the club alive really, and into the new year has been fantastic, and it's been a great effort from all involved.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been unreal, hasn't it? Like, as you said, all the work behind the scenes that we probably haven't seen, or you don't really see in the public domain, that's been done to save the club. Because we were, you know, we were probably a couple of days, hours from losing the club, maybe?
It was close, put it that way. It was definitely close. I don't know how long we would have had left, obviously. Hilton had said he wasn't putting any more money in. There were the winding up petitions, obviously the revenue, there was the winding up petition, there was the CCJs that were, you know, it was just every day it seemed there was another one added to the system. And yeah, it didn't seem as though there was a way out. And when you look at it, sort of when it got that close, and to be honest, Matt, I walked away that day when I'd been in. I walked away at sort of 5 o'clock, and I thought that was it. I just couldn't see a way out. And yeah, it was, as I say, it was surreal, because you never expect your football club to get into that situation, and to kind of witness it firsthand and see what was going on was a real eye opener. And I think, I know fans did realise it came close, but I don't think the majority probably realised how close it was to kind of ceasing to exist. And that would have been an absolute travesty. And, you know, we were close. Obviously, there's still a long way to go. We've got to get through to the end of the season. And I'm sure, you know, Michelle and the rest of them are doing the best to try and make that happen. But, you know, it's a battle. It's an uphill battle. And the state that it was left, unfortunately, isn't making it easy. But yeah, as I say, I think we're in a hell of a better position than we were. But it's just a shame that it came to this. And it's a shame as well that, you know, that Michelle and the rest of the board didn't take it a year earlier, because that would have saved a hell of a lot of issues, I think.
Yeah, you're right. And look, the whole period of Mr. Hilton's tenure from the start of last January to his, you know, eventual demise was quite a bizarre sort of chapter in the club's history, wasn't it, really? There was, you know, U-turns, banning fans, social media burner accounts, breakdowns, meltdowns on the Facebook cult page, and stuff like that. All this stuff that we kind of forget about, but it there was so much stuff happening. It was like, I almost sort of kind of compare it to the Tory party. It's like a new scandal every week, so the previous scandal gets forgotten about, and that's pretty much what was going on with the club and with Hilton. It was like every week something else. It was like, what the hell is this, you know? And then we kind of forgot about the thing that happened the week before, because this was like, this is ridiculous. So that, yeah, it was absolutely bizarre, really. But I think it's important to sort of focus on the people that helped the club come through that period. And as you said, Michelle and all the board members and all the fans who donated to the crowdfund, who helped promote the crowdfund, you know, everybody around the football world who you know, promote, you know, kind of donated to that. Look, we raised, I think the final kind of figure was about just over £72,000, which is absolutely insane if you think about it. You know, we had kind of backing from Kevin Clifton, Thomas Turgoose as well from This Is England, loads of pretty big name people who were kind of getting on board and helping push this. And as you said, some help from The Athletic, who did a great job, a great piece on Hilton, actually some serious, you know, proper investigative journalism that you don't really see these days, you know. And again, a lot of people at the time kind of said, oh, you know, we shouldn't be doing this. What about Hilton's mental health and all that? So even then, they were getting it in the neck for sort of trying to expose a guy who was essentially killing the club. And again, you know, we suffered the same fate, didn't we, really? We had some dissent on social media from when we tried to highlight some of the issues, and you know, we were people tried to shut us up for saying, you know, that all these different things that we were just trying to help the club, really. And thankfully we've got to got to a place where seemingly the club's immediate future is secure. And also, you know, even though there's a lot of debt to address and things like that, I think, you know, a lot of good news happening at the minute. You know, was sort of a promotion battle with Tamworth, which is fascinating. We've won out 8 out of 9 games at home. You know, we've obviously, because we've secured the stadium, that means that we can look at sponsorship on a more of a significant level, with obviously the rename of this of Glanford Park to the Itis Arena, which had some interesting feedback on social media, really. But I think people need to look at the big picture and forget about the wrap. It's mouldy, it needs binning, we need money to save the football club. Let's just remember where we are. But anyway, yeah, it's been absolutely insane, hasn't it? Really, I don't know what else we can say. We could be here all day. Let's be honest. So much shit happened that I think it's worth talking about a little bit. But there's a lot of relevant stuff that's going on at the minute as well. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Boston game. We're going to talk about other football related things, like the sort of problem between Whitehall and Elliot, and which one do you pick in our current, you know, setup and things like that. We want to talk about the trust election. And we want to talk about the Football Supporters Association award nomination for the podcast, or for Iron Brew as well. And there's a few other bits, but, you know, is there anything else that we really need to talk about right now, Matt, you know, from that kind, that saga?
I think that's probably covered most of it. I think securing the ground obviously was a massive achievement. I think to do that in such a short space of time as well, because obviously Peter Swan had deadlines that he had to meet in terms of the mortgage that he'd taken out and things like that, to get that over the line. Obviously everyone involved in that, including the council, have done a fantastic job. And I think that was key to it, really. You know, we had to stay at Glanford Park. I don't think fans would have accepted playing anywhere else. You know, Glanford Park's our home. Although, you know, I think it was heading towards playing at Gainsborough. You know, for the last few games we may have had left, if Michelle hadn't have come in, I think it may have been Gainsborough we had to play at. You know, I think that was key to it all, and that's going to be key to the sustainable long-term future as well. And I think, as you say, we've had some great sponsorship. The Itis Arena, I mean, that's been bubbling on in the background for a while. It was nice to see that kind of revealed at the weekend. And the training ground as well, with Jason Threadgold as well, with the funeral director sponsoring that again. Local businesses stepping up when the club need them most. And I think that's been the kind of best thing about it for me, not only the fans, but local businesses. You look at, I think Boston fans were having a bit of a laugh at how many things were sponsored and things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that's kind of testament to local businesses that have kind of chipped in. And, you know, there's some businesses that have sponsored multiple games, you know, they're sponsoring regularly. And, you know, I think that matters, and that kind of is the key to securing the long-term future. And, yeah, it's good to see, because it's not long ago, you know, we were playing in front of a couple of thousand, games weren't getting sponsored, there was empty ad board spots and things like that. And, you know, yes, you can all have a laugh about it in terms of substitutions being sponsored and things like that, but it's all money into the club. And, you know, that, for me, whatever they can do to secure the future, they've got to do. And unfortunately, given the situation they inherited, these things have got to be done. And I think with the stadium sponsor, it's just another avenue that the club can raise money. And obviously Joe Local done really well for himself in the past, obviously sold his previous company. And this is his new kind of, well, I say new, it's been going for a few years. But again, someone, you know, a wealthy individual in the town wanted to help. And I think also that kind of reflects really well on Michelle, because I think without this, none of it's really possible, because she's got the contacts. She knows these people. These people respect Michelle and what she's trying to do. And it was great to see Steve Wharton there as well at the weekend. I believe he was at the game. So, you know, it's slowly turning. I think everyone's on board. The fans are on board at the moment. Fans through the gates. Fantastic. 4,500. I mean, we've not seen that for a few years now. So, yeah, it's looking better. And I think that's all we can say, really. We're kind of on the right path. And I think there's some really good people at the club now, in not just on the board, but, you know, in other roles. And there's actually people there now to support James, who appears to be doing everything. So, you know, yeah. So
good man, James.
And again, another, yeah, I think it's worth a shout out, because I think Michelle did put it in one of the statements, but I genuinely do believe without James sticking around, we may not have a football club because, you know, he's done so much that's kind of been unrecognised. So, yeah, I think, hats off to him and pleased he's kind of stuck it through, really, because it could have been easy to kind of walk away. And I know other people had, and you can't blame them with what was going on at the club. But he stuck there, and you know, he's hopefully now it's going to become a really good place for him to work, and you know, a really good club.
That's James Moody, by the way. James. Yeah. So maybe there'll be a James Moody interview in the coming weeks. You know, and as you said, Matt, a guy who's very much responsible for the club still being here today. So that'll be a pretty good one. Let's listen out for that. But, you know, many people are responsible for the club being here today, but we probably can't really list them all. But anyway, yeah, James gets a shout out just for the, I'm not even sure, you know, did he like not sleep for 3 months or something like that, you know? Hopefully he's had a good rest now. But anyway, yeah, absolutely, James, top man, and hopefully we'll be able to speak to him soon. But yeah, I think that sort of wraps up that kind of sort of preamble, really, of the sort of the Hilton / Michelle saga, which is now come to an end, and you know, we're in a different era for the club now, and it is looking a lot brighter, but there is still a lot to do. So it's really important that fans continue to support the club, continue to come down to games, and hopefully there'll be a really good crowd against Tamworth on the 20th. So make sure you get your tickets booked for that. It's going to be a big game. Is it? We're going to get into that anyway. But let's move on to, should we, you know, what's the best thing to go with next? Let's just very, very briefly talk about the award nomination for Iron Brew. You probably did see this. You might have even voted for it, but towards the end of last year, and I think the actual ceremony was on the 4th of December. I happened to be in Bruges for that, but I know Matt, you attended, didn't you? And this is the Football Supporters Association Fan Media of the Year Award, which we were nominated for, shortlisted and nominated for, alongside 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other sort of media outlets. And, you know, it's a pretty big deal. Obviously, the podcast was in national news about, you know, the fundraising and the fan banning and stuff like that. But obviously, that was recognised by the panel at the FSA, and a nice little bit of recognition. So, you know, just to mention that in there, we didn't win, unfortunately, but it was nice to be nominated. And Matt went down and had a good time, I think, had a few beers.
Yeah, it was a free bar and nice food. It was at Nobu Hotel. So, yeah, nice food, couple of beers, free wine. So, yeah, it was... yeah, it was a good night and real good celebration, really, of everything that's good in football. And I think they do a fantastic job, the FSA. And I think they were also kind of involved in the sale of the football club. I think they played a part in that with the trust. I had a quick chat with the guy, one of the guys that were helping the trust out on the night. And it was just a nice evening, and yeah, really, really pleased to be nominated because there were some kind of big names up there, and it was just nice to have a little bit of recognition for what's happened this season, really. So yeah, thanks to everyone for the nominations and the votes.
Yeah, the FSA were actually in contact after the whole banning thing as well. Just to put that out there, obviously the FSA are there to help fans. So I was kind of contacted by the FSA regarding my kind of ban from Glanford Park. So just to mention that. So they were well aware of the whole situation. As you said, Matt, that they were really helpful in not only that, but with the deal secure the club as well. So that's really, really important to mention. So fair play to the FSA. Yeah, all right. So I think we can move on to more recent events now, if you like. And the Boston game. And there's been, you know, kind of a bit of a meltdown on social media because we didn't win against Boston. It was a bit of a weird game, actually. I thought sort of first sort of what 20-30 minutes we looked absolute.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Unplayable. Probably the best I've seen is sort of play football-wise this season. Roberts was really, really good on the wing. And he obviously gave their fullback a pretty hard time. But, you know, unfortunately, we didn't capitalise. We got the penalty, but we probably should have scored a few more goals, unfortunately. And then in the second half, it was pretty much all Boston, wasn't it? We had a couple of chances and we didn't take them. They equalised in the 91st minute. A bit frustrating. Not the end of the world scenario that it's kind of been billed as. In some areas of social media, look, we played out of the last nine at home. We've played eight, out of the last nine at home, we've won eight and drawn one. I don't think it's that bad. I just think it's sort of made a little bit more dramatic by Tamworth's unbelievable form. I think they've won six in a row, and they just seem to keep winning. So the game against Tamworth on the 20th is going to be huge. But, you know, what did you think to that one, Matt, the Boston game?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I think first half, especially the first sort of half an hour, I thought we played really well. I thought we used the width of the pitch. A lot of those kind of diagonal balls out to Roberts. And I think that's the best we've seen from him, really, in that first half. Obviously, taking a little while to get up to speed. But I think he showed that, you know, on his day, he is really unplayable at this level. And I think, as you say, the fullback had a bit of a torrid time that first sort of half an hour, gave away the penalty. And, you know, he could have probably scored. He had a couple of chances. But yeah, it was good. I thought we played some really good stuff. And unfortunately, it was one of those games, you know, it could have ended up, you know, with three or four at half time. Boston looked, you know, all over the place in that first half. But then you just worry that if you don't take the chances that the other side are going to come back into it. And to be fair to Boston, they were really good in the second half and they thoroughly deserved it. I know, you know, it was a late goal, but I think on balance of that second half, they deserved it. I thought they got on top of our midfield. And to be fair to Jimmy, I know he did try change it a little bit. I know for me, it didn't quite work, but I think we were getting overrun in midfield prior to that anyway. Not sure. So I know he brought Beast in on centrally, but he quickly moved him. When Shrimpton came on, and I don't know, it just didn't quite work, but it wasn't working at the start of the first half anyway, so we had to do something. And I think he probably thought getting some fresh legs on might help us a little bit in midfield. But it wasn't to be. And yeah, ultimately, I think it was a fair result in the end. But just, you know, frustrating how it happened. I don't think we dealt with either goal particularly well. The first one was really poor.
Dreadful.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what we've been used to seeing in the last couple of seasons, really. Just no kind of no one attacking the ball. And unfortunately, you know, it's come back off the post and someone's hammered it in. The second one, again, just trying to clear the lines. Doesn't quite happen. And to be fair to him, it's a good finish, isn't it? I think he's taken it really well. And he's kind of just used the defender to kind of bend it round. So, yeah. I don't know. Not a lot you can say, really. I think, you know, on another day, I think their manager summed it up on another day, would have been out of sight at half time, but they came back. And sometimes you just got to kind of take the point. I think you're right. I think Tamworth's form kind of compounds it a little bit because, you know, they're kind of pulling away a little bit at the top. I know we've got a game in hand. I think the 5 points clear now, aren't they? But
they beat. Was it Warrington 3-0 on Tuesday?
They had a good result midweek. So that kind of, you know, they are playing really well. Obviously, they're grinding out the results, just seem to be picking up results, even if it's a late goal to grind it out. And, you know, fair play, they're having a good go. And, you know, that game in a couple of weeks now, week on Saturday, becomes massive. But I think it just puts a little bit of pressure on us now to go to Brackley and get a result. Had we won that, you know, you might have said, you know, a draw at Brackley would be a decent result. But now I think, you know, it puts a pressure on us to really be going there looking for 3 points. And that's another tough place to go. So
no, not an easy place to go, is it?
No, and I know we lost there in the Cup. So
be the fourth time we played him this season?
Yes, I think it is, yeah. Because we had the Cup Cup at our place replay, and then we beat them at home with Butterfield's free kick. So, fourth time we've played them. So it's going to be a test. I think it's going to be tough. But yeah, hopefully, you know, if we get a decent result on Saturday, then all the focus is on that big one. But I think there's a hell of a long way to go. And you look at the form, it's been really good. Just unfortunate, really, we couldn't get over the line on Saturday. But I think there's a lot of football to be played. And 5 points, you know, it's not the end of the world. Obviously, if the next two results go against us, then you can maybe start getting a little bit concerned. But yeah, plenty of football to play. So yeah, I think it's just one of those frustrating, but move on to the next game.
I did get a little bit of stick on Twitter for saying we could potentially be 11 points behind Tamworth after the game on the 20th, which is very possible. I don't think it will happen, but you know, Tamworth have got Darlington on Saturday where we play Brackley Darlington. Awful. Hopefully, you know, there might be a surprise there. But again, you know, Brackley's not an easy game. I think they're probably one of the strongest side we've played this season. We've struggled against them in some respects, but we need to go get something from there. So, yeah, it'd be an interesting one. As you said, there's a long way to go, really. Look, I think we're in a good position. I mean, we are in a good position. Look, the squad's pretty much almost fully fit. I think the only real kind of fitness doubt injury was Ross Barrows, and he's supposed to be coming back to fitness in the next week or so. So look, he's got a full squad to choose from as far as I'm aware at this point, as we record this on Thursday ahead of the game at Brackley. So, you know, obviously at the moment there's no kind of scope to strengthen the squad or bring any new faces in because of the embargo, which we will talk about in a little while. But I think, you know, given that kind of Roberts is now kind of looking really, really sharp, I know Beeston's come back in and got a bit match fitness. I thought Elliot was really good on Saturday, actually, and he was actually really good against Farsley on that bog of a pitch. He had a really good game, even though he was playing out wide. He still looked really good. So I think there's probably a lot more to come from Elliot, and he's a different kind of player compared to Whitelawn. And it's something we want to talk about as well, really, that kind of dynamic between two sort of prominent strikers at this level and in the squad, Whitehall and Elliot, both very different types of player. Obviously, you've got Whitehall, who's a target man, a bit of a shit house, you know, that's part of his game as well, which is quite useful at this level. And Elliot, who's more of a back to the goal, into the feet striker with a bit of pace. They're very different. And Elliot showed he's kind of what he's good at the weekend against Boston. I thought he had a really good game, a tapping in a penalty. Probably should have had a hat trick, but and obviously Whitehall's our top scorer. So it's that dynamic though, isn't it? Because Jimmy likes to play a certain way in this league. He says 4-4-2 is dead and stuff like that. And he likes to play a little bit more of a dynamic formation, you know, with one up top and kind of wingers slash forwards and the fullbacks as well, which has been working. No reason to change that. It's been absolutely fine. It's been really good. At times we've looked really, really, really good. You know, just not having Whitehall on the team and bringing Elliot in. By the way, Whitehall's ban was absolutely bizarre, by the way. The fact that Asenso got let off and he didn't was, well, unbelievable, to be honest. It was a joint appeal from Farsley and Scunthorpe, but officiating at this level's bizarre anyway, but that was strange. Anyway, so yeah, you get two different things, don't you? So, you know, you kind of lose that sort of hold-up play a little bit when Whitehall's not on the team. You lose that kind of shithousery a little bit. Obviously, with Elliot, it brings a bit more pace, and he can obviously work the channels as well if he needs to, which can kind of bring some of the other forwards into a more central position, which is a little bit different. I don't know what the best choice is between those two. Obviously, he's preferred Whitehall, but obviously Elliot's got an opportunity now, hasn't he? He's got another couple of games that he's obviously going to be starting in because Whitehall's banned for 3 games. But it just changes that dynamic a little bit, doesn't it? And I think at times against Boston, we played some of our best football we have this year, and is that because Elliot was in the team ahead of Whitehall? I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I don't know. I mean, there's times this season I've been quite disappointed with Elliot. Not so much ability. I think the ability's there. Just sometimes for me, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I've just been a little bit frustrated with him. On the other hand, you know, you could also say the same about Whitehall. And I think a lot of fans have been frustrated with Whitehall at one point or another this season. But, you know, he's top scorer and he was in a decent run, to be fair, before the red card. So, you know, not ideal that he picked that up. I agree. It was an awful decision, really. It's either you've got to overturn one or none, and just leave them both for the suspension. So that was an odd one. Can't really understand that. But yeah, I think we did play some really good stuff at the weekend. I think Elliot was a key part of that. I thought he played really well. And that was probably one of the better games he's had. I know chances have been limited for him of late. Obviously, Whitehall getting the nod. But I think they can both bring things to the squad. Obviously, different styles of player. But I think Whitehall has, you can't argue with his goal scoring record. I know there's been a couple of penalties in there. But, you know, he's amongst the top scorers in the league. He gives defenders things to think about. And, he's having a decent season. So you can't really knock him. So it'd be interesting to see what Jimmy does, obviously. At the moment, his hands are tied, really. We've got to start Elliot, I think, on the back of the weekend. That's not an issue. I think, he's got a couple more games to prove himself. Obviously, two goals doesn't hurt at the weekend. And then when Whitehall comes back, it's going to be interesting to see what Jimmy does. But I think, two good strikers at this level and two strikers that I'm sure any other side at this level would snap your hand off for. So, although we've only really got two strikers in the building at the moment, arguably the best or amongst the best in the league. So, whoever plays, if it means we've just got to just tweak the system a little bit, depending on who plays, that's fine. And that's up to Jimmy and that's what he's there for. And that's... he's got to earn his money that way. So, I don't know. I'm with you. I think both bring different things to the team. That's a really favour one over the other. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he uses them between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't know. I almost lean towards Elliot because if it's not working, then the plan B kind of becomes Whitehall because he definitely brings something different, doesn't he? Kind of going the other way, starting with White on if it don't work and bringing Elliot on towards the end of the match. I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one. Normally, plan B is sort of a target man, isn't it? Rather than a quicker striker. But I don't know. It's a difficult one. Either, to be honest, should be absolutely fine. And to be fair, either it has been all right. As we said, Elliot did well against Boston and he's going to get a chance now, isn't he? Against Brackley on Saturday and the big one against Tamworth. So yeah, I don't know. I certainly don't think it's time to get worried or get concerned about being 5 points behind Tamworth. As you said, we've got to play him at home. We've also got a game in hand. There's a lot more twists and turns to come yet. It's a good problem to have, though. It's we're talking about this top of the league. I think until we conceded Boston's first equaliser on Saturday, we hadn't conceded a goal for about 8.5 hours of football or something like that. So I think, I'm not sure if that was or home. I can't remember, but it's been a long time. So there's a lot of good things going on. It just kind of took the gloss off it a little bit and kind of sort of highlighted a little bit more just because Tamworth just keep winning. But I think if you look at a few people have highlighted on social media that if you look at Tamworth's next few games coming forward, they've got a lot tougher game. They've been playing some teams in and around the bottom. Again, they've got kind of Darlington on Saturday and stuff like that. So and we've very much been playing teams in and around the playoffs recently, so I think there's a lot to go yet. So I won't worry about it too much. And I still think we'll go up. But again, there's a long way to go. So but it's a good problem to have. At least we're not talking about, when are we going to get relegated? How early are you going to know when we're going to be relegated? How many are we going to lose by this week? It's very, very much a different conversation this year. So that was the Boston game. And I think let's move away from the pitch again at the minute. And there's something going on that's not happened for a long time or probably hasn't happened before. And that is a Iron Trust election. You probably would have heard about it. I have tweeted about it. But the Trust is holding an election. Obviously, the Trust's been in for some stick of recent years, but I think they've been very, very good in helping to secure the ground with the ACV, Asset of Community Value. And so let's talk about the Trust a little bit. And I think it's really important. I've been very vocal on social media about trying to get more people to join the Trust. I think the membership's nearly, or maybe at this point, has more than doubled since September. So we're coming up to 900 members for the Trust when in sort of September it was about 400. So this is absolutely insane turnaround. I think people realise the need for an organisation like the Trust when the club is under threat. And I think it's important for the solidarity, and the more members the Trust has, the stronger it is. And of course, if you do join the Iron Trust, and it's £10 for a a lifetime membership if you do join the trust. The trust is planning to buy another set of shares from the club once the club releases shares for purchase. The club has promised the trust, because I think they've already donated £5,000 to the club. They said that will be converted into shares, and I believe they're planning to do that again in the coming weeks. I'm not sure of the sum, but again, so your kind of membership is directly supporting the trust, but it's also directly supporting the club as well. So it's another way of putting money in the club's pocket. So just so you know, that that's really important to kind of highlight. But because of the good work the trust has done and the notoriety of the trust recently, they've come round to election time. And normally that I think that there's an election for four seats on the board. And previously there's never really been a need for an election as far as I'm aware, just because it was sort of I don't want to say a foregone conclusion, but it wasn't that widely publicised. And I only joined the trust in the last few months, so I'm not sure myself. And so because of that, there's been we've got six candidates proposed for the board, the four places on the board of the trust. And if you're a member of the trust, you'll have had your email asking you to vote for four out of six of those candidates. Now, I've tweeted about it. I am standing for the election. That's all I'm going to say in this podcast. If you want to know more, you can look at my Twitter page. I've pinned it to the top of my statement. But just the way it works is four out of the six candidates, and the candidates are myself, Ryn Goslin, John Needham, Chris Skinner, Mark Stockdale, and Neil Wright of Iron Brew Podcast fame. And the election vote will close on the and then that will be independently verified. And then we should find the results of that at the AGM, I believe, which is the week after of the trust. So just to kind of mention, that is happening. So if you've not yet voted, you know, please do reply to that email and vote if you're a member of the trust and haven't got that email yet. I would just hit the trust up on maybe Twitter or just ask. It could have gone in your spam. Just have a look in your spam folder, see if it's in there. If not, just get in contact with them. But it's important, isn't it, Matt, that the trust gets as much as many members as possible. And this is a pretty big event that is, I think it's important to highlight, is going on. And that, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not yet a member of the trust, why aren't you a member of the trust? Please become a member of the trust. It's really important. But I think you'll agree with me that the more members the trust have, the stronger it is.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. And I think, you know, as you said, you touched on previously that they've had a little bit of stick, haven't they, over the past few years, whether it was when Neil went onto the board. Obviously, I think it was very difficult circumstances when Neil went onto the football club board, as the fan rep didn't quite work out as anyone had hoped it, I think. And unfortunately, Neil and also the trust sort of took a lot of stick for that. And it was unfortunate. But I think what's really good about the trust, and I think obviously knowing John and Tony, you know, they've taken kind of a bit of stick over the years, but they're, you know, they're massive fans of the club. They could have easily been kind of disheartened, I think, because previous to the past sort of 4, 5, 6 months, you know, the take-up for membership hasn't been great, really. I think they will agree with that, that they've never really had as many members as they would have hoped for. But I think because of what's happened with Hilton and obviously the back end of Swan's tenure, I think, you know, it's been the catalyst, really, for the trust to really, you know, get some momentum. And I think the numbers signed up now, I don't know the exact number, I know it keeps going up, doesn't it, but not far off 900, I don't think, which is fantastic. And I think you know, it's testament really to the work that the guys do, because it has gone unnoticed in the past. I think they've you know, done some good work behind the scenes. And as I say, it would have been easy to get disheartened. I think, you know, when Swan was at the club, he didn't really want meetings with them. There was never that real open dialogue. I know towards the end there was. I think now with sort of the board that we've got now, you would hope that there's a bit more open dialogue between the fans and the trust and the other supporters groups as well, not just the trust. But I do think, you know, it's one really good thing that's come out of all this is that you know, the trust have been backed and hopefully, you know, can keep growing, keep the membership keep growing. And I think, obviously, not going to say too much on the nominees. Obviously, it's good to see a few new faces, obviously yourself on there, Bryn, as a younger fan. I think that's really important as well, and that the kind of the younger section of the support represented. So, you know, I think it's just really important that if you're a member, you vote and have your say. And obviously, if you're not a member, get signed up. You know, £10 for a lifetime membership is nothing really. And I think it's really important just in case. And you know, touch wood, we're never in this position again. But I think, you know, we're stronger if we do have a strong trust and a large membership behind it. So definitely go and vote if you're a member of the trust, and be interesting to see what happens on the back of that. But I think it's been a good year really for the trust. I think there's a lot of momentum behind it now, and I think they've come out of this really well, just like we have really.
I think so. It's a good time to get involved and get behind the trust and just be aware of what they do and join for the price of what, 2 pints these days. You know, it's a lifetime membership. I think it's important that people do. And really, I'd like to see it sometime early this year, them kind of go past the 1,000 membership mark. I mean, look, we're getting 4,500 people at Glanville Park. A good proportion of that should be members of the Iron Trust. Every fan should be, really. I mean, the Trust are always there on the Iron Trust corner, as they call it, and just outside Glanville Park on match days. So, you know, go talk to them, go sign up. It's really important. You get a nice little pin badge. It's on my jacket now. So it's such a big thing. And I think, you know, a stronger Trust is as strong as Scunthorpe United, and having that kind of fan group, that representation, a body that looks out for the club but also looks out for fans as well and is able to facilitate different things is really, really important. So let's back them and let's join and make sure you vote in the election and let's go forward from there. So I think that's, you know, it's been a long time. You know, it's the last podcast we did was the 25th of August, and that was 4 games into the season, and a lot has happened since then. And you know, at times we didn't think we would be doing another regular podcast because we thought that the club was hours away from its demise. But thankfully, that's not happened. You know, we're all able to keep going to games to enjoy, you know, taking our kids to Scunthorpe games and things like that. Something you might not have been able to do if it had died. And we're enjoying going to the club. We're enjoying spending money on beer, getting, you know, having a goat burger, even the crumble, which I've not had yet, but it looks really, really good. So go buy the crumble. But you know, this stuff we're now getting to see the club and the community around the club flourish a little bit. And attract investors and attract the local business community, which is the path to sustainability. And I think that we've seen that. And as you said, Matt, that's down to kind of Michelle's connections, the hard work that she's done, the hard work of the board. But look, we're in a really good position now. We thought we were dead, but we're not. And we're alive, you know. So it's important to remember that every time you go down to Glanville Park, that you can go next week and see your mates and stand on the terrace and shout abuse to the referee and you know, things like that. Because that was essentially something that was hours away from not being a thing anymore. And what would you do? You know, you can't just go support Grimsby or something like that. What the fuck would you do? You know, you only support one football club. And once it's dead, that's it. What the hell do you do with your Saturdays? So it's not. And the only reason it's still alive and that you can continue to do these things and support the club that you've grown up supporting, that maybe your dad supported and things like that, and you can still make that pilgrimage to Glanville Park on a Saturday, is because some people, in the face of adversity, in the face of threats, and in the face of insurmountable odds, have come in and they've stood up for this football club. They've put their money in. They've put their reputation on the line. They've taken abuse from it. Some of them have even taken death threats on social media, you know, and they've stood up for the club. And thank you to everybody who's done that. Thank you to everybody who supported the podcast, supported the club, supported Iron Brew. Thank you for everybody who's donated to the fundraiser. Thank you to everybody who's apologised to me and Matt for giving us abuse when they thought we were enemy of the state for calling out David Hilton. Thank you to everybody who's realised that we're not. And everything we've done and a lot of people and groups have done is in the interest of the football club, and now you'll realise that. And thank you to everybody for that. And, you know, see you down at Glanville Park. See you for a beer in the Iron Bar, whatever it is. Come and have a chat. We're there most weeks. I know Matt is. So, you know, it's important that the club has survived for so many people, because I don't know what the hell I would have done with my Saturday if it didn't. So yeah, see you against Tamworth. Make sure you buy your ticket, make sure you join the Iron Trust, and there is a light that never goes out. Cheers, up the Iron.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.